Welcome, everybody, to another episode of the Righteous Prick Podcast. I'm your host, J.L. Covan. It is 10:18 a.m. Eastern on December 5th in the year of our Lord, 2022. I am hopped up on dark chocolate, green tea, and walnuts, so you know this is going to be a hot fire episode. All sorts of flavonoids, antioxidants, anti-inflammatories running through my veins. My taste buds hate me because I just put dark chocolate and forest feces, walnuts, on them. But yeah, let's get to this episode. Work is still slow, both comedically and legally. So I'm just, I don't want to call my shot here like Babe Ruth or Jake Taylor in Major League, but it just feels like 2023. The money seems to be, I don't know. I hope not, but I feel like I could get laid off in 2023. And it's not just me. I feel like there could be like sizable layoffs. Maybe I'm wrong, but when you enter your fourth month without billing an hour at your law firm because work is so slow, I think that's a bad harbinger for the economy. I think a lot of businesses, big businesses and things are holding off on mergers and lawsuits and bankruptcies and whatever else that is. No, not bankruptcy, but because, I feel like legal costs and legal work is sort of a canary in the larger economic coal mine. And I work for a very large firm and, I've had stretches of like 2 weeks off over the course of my 3+ years of employment. But, oh, and by the way, if I make it to the end of the year, it'll be the longest I've ever held one job in my life that wasn't comedy, where I've never held a job because I'm an independent contractor and fluffer, basically, in the comedy business. But I was 3 years, 4 months at the DA's office when I got out of law school, and this job I started the last week of August. So if I make it to January 1st, it will be the longest I've ever held one job. So how about that? History in the making, folks. And it's only been the most stressful time in my life because by some miracle, 7 months after I started that job, my comedy career made a rapid turn before rapidly turning again to a fiery descent, which is where we are now. We are in the rubble and wreckage of Flight JLC. I got a bunch of stuff I want to talk about today. What should we start with, guys? Good news or bad news? Just kidding. It's all bad news. No, there's good news as well. The Lord is risen. Have you not heard the good news? Well, you just did. Boom. Faith Talk with J.L. Covan. You can hear it on SiriusXM, the Catholic channel. I want to give you some good news first. Okay. This weekend, I saw the third edit of Half Blackface. And let me tell you something, guys. There won't be a fourth edit because we finally did it. We finally did it. Like a James Cameron movie after what feels like decades, but is only a little over a year. I finally, and Cookie's growling because my next door neighbor is moving and she feels like she needs to be vocal about this, which she doesn't. Please stop, Cookie. You're not tough. You're the biggest coward I know. Yeah. Anyway, Cookie's voicing her displeasure at the noise in the hallway, as she does. But it's done. It's not done in terms of artwork, closing credits, like all that stuff, but it is done. I have seen and approved a final edit for content. I gotta say, I don't want to boost it too much because we all know how I feel about the greatest set anyone on planet Earth has ever had. And that was, of course, October 23rd, 2021 at the Triad Theater, the first taping of Half Blackface, which will be the album, was the, I would argue it was the greatest set in comedy history, certainly in my career. But having seen the video for Half Blackface based on the May taping, I've watched that set, I think, 7 times. And it's always a nerve-wracking experience because you just expect to hate your own work at some point. Either the first time you watch, you go, oh, why did I think that was better than it was? But especially when you're like watching for nitpicking on the 7th viewing, you just expect to sort of be like, okay, it's well, Hopefully people aren't bored of it. That, you know, hopefully the people who haven't seen it, which is almost everybody, loves it as a fresh take. But I certainly fucking hate this thing now that I'm, now that I've seen it so many times. I can't wait to move on. Well, let me tell you something. Seventh viewing of Half Blackface, I fucking love it. I'm still like, I really think it's just, it's sharp, it's good, it's edited well, it looks good. So that's it, folks. Now we move on to contract and adding graphics and then the sales pitch. And the agent for it made his, caveat. He was like, he made two cuts. One is 1080, which is just standard HD, and the other is 4K, which is what platforms will require, like a Netflix and HBO. They'll require the 4K. But he did a 1080 just to showcase maybe different angles, because as I've said before, the first taping we don't have to get into for the 900th time on the catastrophic technical errors that were present and not told to me until 2.5 months later, which hindered my ability to get bookings and be sharp for the second taping, or as sharp as I could be. We don't have to go through that. That will forever remain a deep well of mistrust and trauma as far as my comedy career is concerned, and I wish I was not exaggerating. But, when it's the biggest night of your comedy career and it goes well, and then somebody doesn't tell you the truth about it for 2.5 months, sits on the fact that and you could have booked gigs and produced it, a reshoot sooner after a tour of gigs, it sort of hurts, because it's literally insult to injury. And, but the second taping had a camera snafu as well. So we were limited to one show, obviously, because I don't sell fucking tickets, and two cameras instead of three. So it took some real technical savvy to make the edits, which is sort of why it was maybe a little longer than it should have been. Once again, presented to me as a, I don't know why it's taking so long. Well, now I know, because now I've gotten the information directly from the source, and realized it was because it was a harder technical pull because of the limitations from technical errors. So they used the footage to create like different angles and stuff, but they could only do that at a 1080. So if this ends up just going to not, being sold by Amazon Video and iTunes, then we may use the 1080. But if it goes to a platform, we will use the 4K. And then he put in parentheses, this is a long shot. And I was like, I know it's a long shot. You don't think I know it's a long shot? Did you have to rub it in? But I guess they want to make sure that the giant psycho behind Half Blackface doesn't have heightened expectations. But I think listeners of the Righteous Prick podcast know JL couldn't have lower expectations at this point. Not afraid of having such low expectations that you wonder, why am I even doing it? Ron Reagan Jr., everybody. Good to have you back, Ronnie. RRJ. So the good news amidst all that cynicism and negativity is that the special, content-wise, is done. I am very proud of it. My end of the work, I am extremely proud of. I obviously wish it had gone 100 times better in so many ways, but I just hope that means that by January, it is either being offered or I have an announcement on who will be hosting it. And of course, I think at this point, I would gladly accept anybody purchasing it and airing it on their platform. I don't care who it is, because it just means potentially reaching more fans than my own, who have, largely been a sort of apathetic, frugal bunch, which you never, apathy and frugality are a bad combo for a comedian's fan base. But and when you throw in social media shadow banning, you really got a triple threat there of putting your comedy career on life support. I have the best fans in the world. They don't spend money. They don't really care. And most of them don't even see the content to begin with and never do a deep dive like going to my website or any other social media platform to find my content. But I love them. They have built me up, and I am so proud to have Jailbirds. That's the name of my fan base, by the way. What's Swifties and the Beehive? Well, mine are Jailbirds, but it's not spelled J-A-I-L. It's just J-L-B-I-R-D-S. Jailbirds. You just got to say it real quick. And that's based on my father, my Haitian father, when a teammate of mine, Andrew, called the summer after freshman year, called my house just to say what's up. And he said, hey, is JL there? And my dad went, Jail? Why is somebody calling for Jail? I said, oh, that's me. And he goes, oh, Jean-Louis. And then from that moment on, for the next, I guess, 15, 16 remaining years, no, I'm sorry, like remaining 18 years of his life, when he would call me JL, he would say it laughingly. He would be like, JL, JL, like very sarcastic, like, I can't believe my son is catering to ignorant Americans by shortening his name. We're not Indian. We don't have to shorten our 900 consonant names to something like Dave. You're Jean-Louis. It's French. It's a real it's a significant world language, and people in a cosmopolitan place like New York should be able to pronounce it, and they can't. So I go by JL. JL is a real capitulation to the collective ignorance of America. So sellout I am in some respect, but my dad would always go JL, JL, and he always had that tone of, you know, how pathetic, you weak-kneed bitch. Stand up, say your name as Karen on the right, the black guy who tips would say, with your chest, Jean-Louis, that's my name. And then you get older, and women who want to seem cultured are like, I love your name, Jean-Louis. And I'm like, well, you know what? It would have been helpful if you were announcing basketball games in Division III basketball, so I wouldn't have been afraid of somebody calling me Gene Lewis for two. And that's how arrogant I was. I thought I was going to be scoring so many points in college that, like, announcers would just be like, Gene Lewis, Gene Lewis. I'd be like, oh, my God, I dropped 42. Could you have learned my name by the end of the game? Jeez. But instead, I was a very jacked bench warmer for most of my career. So, you know, they knew my name in the weight room, motherfucker, but not on any scoreboards. Anywho, guys, the special. So let's look forward to it, I guess. Hey, if Tubi or Fucky or Kobe or Doobie want to buy it, great. Anything with a new avenue to fans that aren't currently my fans, because I really need to find a different stream of fans. My Patreon made a major dip. I think I lost like 5 or 6% of my Patreon subscribers this month. So that's another thing that will probably die soon. I thank the people who are supporting it. It loses money for me, basically. Overall, I think it's been almost a money loser because of certain editing costs I've had during some of the months. But that's par for the course. I don't do comedy business well, and I'm not ending it yet. But it's just, I don't, you know, I'm not a nonprofit as much as my comedy career seems to be a nonprofit. It's supposed to be a profit. And so losing a bunch of people, I mean, I've put, you know, I lament this all the time, but it's like, there's a bunch of bonus podcasts, that sort of standard shit for a Patreon. But I really did, like, I made a bunch of videos exclusively for it, thinking that all these people who kind of didn't give two shits about my stand-up comedy but loved my impressions, I thought they'd throw down like $4 a month or something for like exclusive sort of series featuring some of their favorite JL universe characters. And I was wrong. And that's okay. Like I said, the example I always use is when I put up the preview for the Mitch McConnell cooking series, it got like 20,000 views on Twitter, and people are like, this is amazing. And I think one person joined like in that week. So it's just, it's not working. It's like, I'm not good at the comedy business. I haven't attracted the fan base, a fan base that's like sort of translates into ticket sales or purchases. So, you know, at this point, when you sort of have to realize you're a sort of distraction, like a, you know, chewing a pen cap or chewing gum or masturbation, like, you know, those are all important things for people to do as well, but it's just not a good business model for my career. So we'll see how long. Obviously, I want to keep the Patreon alive from a business standpoint and continue to produce stuff for it until the special is released somewhere, because it would always be nice to have like some of these like more stand-up fans who maybe are familiar or engaged in Patreon type stuff to have an opportunity to see more stuff by me. But if that doesn't happen, or when that happens and it fails like everything else, then I'll shut down the Patreon and I'll shut down making podcasts great again, which is another avenue where I just go, we got these like thousands of listeners, and I just, no matter how many times I pitch, it's just we don't add Patreon subscribers. So whatever, it is what it is. It's just the facts. No judgment. It's I had a good run. It's not the run I anticipated. It's in hindsight, it's not really the run I would have wanted. I wouldn't have wanted to be competing with a lip syncer. I wouldn't want that to be the way that my career ends. I wish I could have like shut my shit down on its own terms, not with a shadow banning and lip syncing being sort of the things that hurt my career. But hey, that's what it is. So that's the way I announce good news, guys. It's like 30 seconds of good news and 14 minutes of, but even despite that good news, my comedy career is responding to the chemo, but we're still going to have to amputate your heart. We're still going to have to remove your heart and brain. But so far, the comedy chemo is working. So that's the good news, Jail. The bad news is by your 44th birthday in April, you'll probably be done with comedy again because it's a stupid business and the country is full of stupid people. And, stupid, stupid, and stupid is no way to go through a comedy career, to paraphrase Animal House. So that's the good news about the special. How about that, guys? If you think that's good news, wait till I get to the bad news. My albums, my life's work, the children, the closest thing to children I have other than Cookie, it's been my adult life's work creating these albums. I have great pride in my quality and volume of work. Racial Chameleon, just for anybody who's bought the USB cards, this is the order, because I can give you my order of rank of albums and then my chronological order. So if you want to see the JL comedic universe develop, my voice, how I change, how I get better, how I take on different things, it's Racial Chameleon 2006, Diamond Maker 2008, Too Big to Fail 2012, Keep My Enemies Closer 2013, Israeli Tortoise 2016, and Thoughts and Prayers 2018, and Half Blackface 2047, apparently. But just kidding, I guess 2023, folks. But those six albums have made me six figures between streaming royalties and sales, mostly streaming royalties. But those albums have made me, probably between merch sales, streaming royalties, and online sales. I've probably made, obviously that's a 15-year pace, but I've probably made between $120,000 and $150,000 career off of those albums. And of course, that's a place to point people to when they want to hear more of your stand-up. You can just say, hey, well, check out stream or buy my albums. Well, it came to my attention thanks to a fan, Kane, great name. Kane is able to tell me when my albums are not on streaming platforms. So he said to me, hey, JL, your stuff has disappeared off Apple Music. And I was like, that's interesting. I wonder why that is. And then as that opened the floodgates, and I found out that all six of my albums were off of all streaming platforms. That meaning I knew they were off Pandora, because that's related to the SiriusXM litigation. So that bothers me, but I have an explanation, so I'm not like disturbed. I'm just like, man, fuck, I can't wait till stuff is back up there. Spotify, they've been off for a long time, and I don't even want to put my stuff on Spotify anyway anymore, but that related to that litigation also. They just booted like a ton of comedy content off because they prefer the business model where they play your stuff and pay you nothing or next to nothing. But Apple Music, Tidal, YouTube Music, Amazon Music, all disappeared, all gone. And people were like, your Trump albums are still there. I go, yeah, not stand-up. Thank you. I said stand-up. Those were produced by a third party. So that third party's content is still up on all platforms. So you can listen to Fireside Craps 1 and 2 on everything, but those aren't my stand-ups. And those are very important to me from a content perspective. And a marketing standpoint and a way to keep fans engaged or tell new fans where they can hear stuff if they're among the 13 to 15 people who do like my stand-up. They're all gone. And I can't get an answer. I've contacted CD Baby, which is the place that basically produces and upload like loads it. So CD Baby, I believe, is the right place to go. And I've been waiting for an answer for like 5 days from them and counting. But it's very distressing, as you can imagine, because it starts, as I've said, it starts to feel like the paranoia is not paranoia. Like, why is my stuff gone? What the fuck is that? So my special has problems. I get shadow banned. All my stand-up albums are like basically unpurchasable or unstreamable. Like, what the fuck? That's very distressing, because it just starts to be like I joked. I was the Book of JL. I was joking the other week. Was it last week? About like my comedy career feeling like the Book of Job. And I was not done, apparently. Apparently there was like more bad news, which is all the albums being gone. Like, I feel erased. If I say that, will progressive Twitter back me up? Like, JL's been erased. Is this about identity? Oh, it's about his comedy? Well, we don't do that. We do metaphorical erasure, not literal erasure. So that's actually the really distressing news. Because I don't have to explain it. I mean, you can imagine. I mean, it's just how many ways am I gonna get fucked in this world of comedy? Like, I don't, I don't get it. Like, is this, like I said last week, is this God just being like, JL, you promised if I fucked up the October taping, you were done with comedy. You were meant to open up a home for special needs kids and use your talents and energy and hostility to make lives of other people better, not to entertain stupid Americans who don't get jokes. That's not your mission in life, said the Lord. So I don't know. I don't know. Maybe I've gone back on my word with God, and I'm being punished. Does this sound too weird? It sounds a little weird, but you reach a point where you go, I'm not sure any more bad things can happen to my comedy career, so it's starting to feel kind of odd and on purpose. So yeah, that's, but other than that, everything's good. Other than my life's work and my career being in shambles, it's, we're happy. We're happy. Did I mention my Patreon? Hey guys, go check out patreon.com/JLCovan. This is the time to do it in case I end it, because out of spite, I'll fucking destroy all the content I made on the Patreon just to be like, nobody gets to see it. I will cut off my head to spite my face. Weak people cut off their nose to spite their face. I'm a spite king. I'll cut off my head to spite my ear. That's how spiteful I am. So this Patreon content will vanish. I will do that. I will take my Patreon content like a Texas mother hearing messages from the beyond, and I will drown my toddler content in a river in Texas, and until I become a national true crime story. JL, Jean-Louis Covan, originally from Louisiana, moved to Houston and started hearing voices from the devil saying, quit comedy. It might have been God, actually, because nobody liked his comedy. So it might have been the Lord sending that message. But either way, he eventually drove into a lake with his six albums and the six master copies of his albums, now that they've been taken off of streaming platforms, and all his Patreon content on a USB drive. And he drove it into a lake and was heard screaming, "The Lord wants me to kill my babies." And he swam out of the lake, and a passerby noticed the car, a Tesla, because he believed in clean energy, bubbling into the lake, and called the police. And when the police dragged it out, we called detectives from Comedy Central, who were able, through forensics, to discover that in fact it was Patreon content, and it was no longer, because of the water, it was no longer salvageable. So he had murdered all his Patreon content and the six masters. He had broken the CDs. So they were dead before they had an opportunity to drown in the Houston Lake. But he is now being held on charges of comedy infanticide, and will be arraigned shortly in a a Houston courtroom for comedy slaughter. It's a very sad ending to this story, and we will keep you updated with more news as we receive it. Back to the studio, Jim. Well, that was crazy. Wow. He really puts the laughter in manslaughter. Too soon, Deborah? Okay. Well, coming up next, dogs, man's best friend, or fuck buddies, you decide. Okay, guys. That was my news from hell segment. So that was fun. So, Patreon and the bank and bang and the kink begin. Anyway, guys, I'm losing my mind here, and I hope you're enjoying it. But I do have some shows coming up. I just and what's weird about me is now I had a show on the Upper West Side. Where in the hell are you from, Johnny? Upper West Side. Ghostbusters 2, guys, look it up. Good movie, very underrated. But I had a show on the Upper West Side. It was a late show. And I just went into the city and went to the TikTok Diner by Penn Station, had a waffle and a tea, and finished reading my Jim Thorpe biography. And then I went and did the show, and I was really tired because my health issues are still here. My neck is getting a little sore. I'm really fatigued. So I have my checkup on my annual physical on Wednesday, in part for preparation for shoulder surgery on the 21st. So I might be short on some content the week of the 20th, the week of the 19th, because I'm having shoulder surgery, but maybe I can record some can from the hospital surgery recovery room and be like, what's up, guys? This goes out to all my fans. I just had shoulder surgery. They just gave me some oxy, so I'm going to go home and get high and recover. And thank you for all the prayer emojis and the blessings. Like, I love you guys. You guys are the best. All three of you watching this Instagram live, you give me strength, so thank you. Peace out, guys. Bye. I did the show. It was a really good crowd, really good lineup. Chris Lamberth, friend of the show, friend of the pod, friend of the show, friend in real life. That's the way I refer to my friends, who are also comedians. And then I went up and I was like, I think I'm having a good set, but I left. I didn't share this with anybody, but I was like, I fucking ate a dick. I sucked. I fucking sucked. And then I watched the tape, and this has been happening with me a lot. I had a really good set, and the crowd was really, like, good. They were good for everybody, but, like, it was late, and I was going on. I ran the light by about 12 minutes, but it was a good set with, like, a lot of new material, and I'm just, there's such a disconnect now between, like, how I feel about how I'm doing and then watching it again and going, oh, that was pretty good. And I think maybe that just speaks to my despondency about comedy. Like, I'm not even like, I enjoy it for my own, but I feel like almost disconnected from the crowd now. Because when I watched it this morning, I was like, hey, that was a pretty good set. And I'm really like, some of the new material is fucking good shit. Like good enough that I'm like transcribing the set because I want to remember like a lot of the bits I did. As we approach March 31st and April 1st, The Hateful Eighth, JL's Eighth Hour, Triad Theater, New York City. Just in case anybody's coming from out of town, hold off for a second. I know some people will be coming in from out of town. The only thing I will warn you is I'm still looking to see if they can hook me up with a one Saturday, two shows in April. Because April 1st, it would be a 9:30 show, which is fine. But I think if you listen to the show, you know that I'd like to do a second taping. Even though I never did a second taping, really, but I've been scarred by Half Blackface, the experience of Half Blackface, that I'm like, let's do a second taping. You never know what's going to happen in my career, but it's always going to be bad. But the only one they have is Friday, 9:30, March 31st, which works, of course, but I'm wary of doing a late Friday show because I'm fucking exhausted on Friday nights. And I don't want that energy. So I'm looking for a 7 and 9:30 Saturday in April. But if they can accommodate that, I will do March 31st and April 1st. But I will confirm that once you see the graphics, you know, like promoting the show, then you'll know I've locked in a date or dates. So, but just something to pencil in. But as far as other shows, I don't know what the fuck I was just talking about. But I've got... Oh yeah, but just my disconnect from like, oh, I actually did well and like was happy with the material, but I never feel that way anymore, which is weird. I think ever since half blackface the first taping, where I just was euphoric in a way that I hadn't been for like at least a decade about comedy. I think now my system is just like, do not get excited about any jokes or any shows because they will take it away from you. But Mamaroneck, December 17th, theater show. It's a fixed amount I'm getting paid, so it's not like the more people that show up, the better. But I don't know who listens to this fucking podcast, but I know I have a lot of friends who moved north of the city, you know, for fucking houses and because they had lots of money and whatever. So I hope all those people in Westchester and beyond who live like within 45 minutes of the Emmeline Theater in Mamaroneck can make it out to the show. It'd be cool. And then maybe I sell some merch after and, you know, I get a nice check and a little bit extra money from the merch and we all have a good time. So December 17th at the Emmeline, if I'm pronouncing that right, theater in Mamaroneck. January 6th and 7th, I'm at the Brokerage in Long Island. And January 19th, I'm in Pittsburgh. And right now, I've just confirmed, don't have a ticket link yet, but Boston, back at City Winery in Boston, March 3rd, which is a Friday. So March 3rd, Boston, City Winery in Boston. I'll put it up on my website and promote it when I have a ticket link. And I'm just working on a bunch of other gigs. But as I've said, I won't lament this too much, but, you know, a lot of the clubs that booked me in 2022, I sold okay, but I didn't sell enough for them to give a shit, which is, it's nobody's fault, but collectively, it's sort of like if you like a comedian and he's really trying to fucking break out, you got to go see him live. That's how you keep getting to see him live. See me live so I can live. That's called poetry. Not afraid of pronouncing a word two different ways. I think that's called a homonym. And that was Gay Slander by JL, who insinuated last week that I was gay. But in fact, I'm not telling. Not afraid of keeping up the sexual ambiguity. I'm Ron Reagan. Not afraid of burning in hell. So I'm trying to get Ohio gigs. I'm trying to get Florida gigs. I'm trying to get North Carolina gigs, DC gigs, Philly gigs, West Coast gigs, Utah gigs, and I'm kind of Atlanta gigs, and I'm kind of striking out, which I struck out so much in like 2019 that's basically why I took the day job that I have now, because I was just like, I can't keep relying on like the kindness of comedy booking strangers. I just have to get a job and like be like, it's like, in other words, it was like I was in a position where I was like, basically I need luck right now, not hard work, not free time for my comedy career to blow up. So I was like, well, if I don't need free time to keep sitting around hoping people reply to emails, I might as well just have a good day job and be like, oh, I'll worry about that. I'll use my vacation time and worry about that when clubs actually start writing back to me. So I'm trying to get back to all these places that I really like, but it's not happening. And there's going to be, I think, a February Chicago date, City Winery in Chicago. So if you're a Chicago listener, please, you know, just put a big pencil mark around the entire month of February and say, we cannot go anywhere. We must stay in the state of Illinois and in the city of the greater Chicago area, because JL will be here at some point in this month. It's the shortest month, so we can afford it to not go on vacation during these measly 28 days. But those are the gigs right now. So as I've said repeatedly, a lot hinges on half blackface, but it's, you know, it's not for lack of quality that half blackface is going to fail. But, you know, odds are it's not going to do what I need it to do. But, you know, like I always say, if I'm still doing comedy, then I'm doing comedy. When I stop doing comedy, I stop doing comedy. But there's no in-between where I'm like, I'm kind of dabbling. No, it's until that special fails, and when my eighth hour comes and goes without any fanfare or hype or revenue boost, then we just hang it up. We say, okay, 2023, June 2023 will be an interesting time, because that'll be 20 years. And I'd love to release the eighth hour on June 2nd, my uncle, my deceased uncle's birthday, but also the first day I ever did stand up. Tacoma Station Tavern, Washington, D.C., Monday, June 2nd, 2003. Do I remember that date? No, but I just remember it was the first Monday of June in 2003. So I looked it up and it happened to be June 2nd. It'd be good to release that eighth hour then. And maybe that is, I know I'm the boy who cried retirement, but you know, I think you hear it now. This is a real moment, I guess. The next few months or the next half a year will be a real moment for my comedy career, because it's whether I have a career or not. That's all. It's not, oh, I fucking hate, as much as I bitch and moan, it's basically going to be, well, do I have a career or don't I? Because 20 years is enough time, especially with real concrete accomplishments, notoriety, press coverage, quality. That's more than enough time to assess whether you have a career. And if I'm looking at my you know, if my 2023 projected income from comedy is like $39,000, not to shit on that, I'm proud of that, of every dollar I fucking make as a comedian, but that ain't enough for me to live as a full-time comedian, which means it's a wrap. And that's, I'm not saying these specific dollar amounts to like make any kind of specific economic point. I'm just saying, if after 20 years of hard work, of good quality comedy, of a varied skill set within comedy, and a lot of followers and notice from press and success on different platforms in different ways, but if I still, if after that I can't sustain a career, then I'm done as a, I refuse to be a part-timer. I just have to do something else with my life. And, you know, as psychotic as this might sound, yeah, I might fucking try to write a book, and make that my sort of passion project and put my skills and side hustle into that. But I think stand-up comedy will have run its course. I can't believe I'm saying that to a certain degree, because I can't believe that I haven't succeeded to the degree that I think I should, but facts are facts. And as Ben Shapiro said, they don't care about your feelings. So, you know, like I said, this was a good news podcast. But let's talk about some more fun stuff. And I came up with a new bit today. We were, the Righteous Girlfriend and I share a particular distaste for Dave Matthews Band. I don't know how they ever became so big. I find them annoying. I make one exception for the song Two Step, mainly because the first 2 minutes of that song sound like a fucking haunting Western, like somebody's chasing you. It's like, bam, 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 bam. Like, it's just, it, I love the beginning of Two Step, and I put up with the rest of the song because I like the beginning so much. But other than that, I find it, like, I joked with her and I got her to laugh, guys. I got her to laugh. Maybe that's why I'm such a good mood today. But I got her to laugh because I said, I was describing Dave Matthews because I need a pivot from my Marvel bit, because people aren't enjoying me taking down Marvel, where I'm just like, it's enough with Marvel, I think. And I'm going to stick with it because I'm a truth teller, guys. I'm going to stick with shitting on Marvel. Not any individual movie, but at this point, it's just too much. To quote Dave Matthews, you make too much, but it's too much. It's too much. It's gluttony. It's now people are sort of conditioned, to just keep going more Marvel, more Marvel. Like it's too much. And I think people are caught in a loop and they've got caught in the, it's not art, it's content kind of thing, where it's like, now Marvel is your part-time job. Like, you may enjoy it, but you also feel a compulsion at this point. Maybe that's what the track would be called, Marvel Compulsion Syndrome. You've got a case of MCS. But I figured maybe I can shit on something that people liked in my day when I was a young man, as a way of like a peace offering. Like, hey, we had shit that was overblown too. Like Dave Matthews Band. I was like, who the fuck thought a band with like a tuba player, which is also known in jazz as the fart machine, a violinist, a percussionist, a guitarist, and a lead vocalist who sounds like Jar Jar Binks. How the fuck did that ever become popular. And then I just started singing Dave Matthews songs. Who there? Here's Dave Matthews. And then I said, what if we just do replace him with Jar Jar Binks? Not much of a difference. Misa do crash. Crash into me. And I was doing that and had her laughing. So expect me as I fade into oblivion as a comedian to really lean into the most annoying facets of my skill set. And Jar Jar, you know, Dave Binks will probably be the title of that track when I'm just like doing my Dave Matthews Jar Jar Binks roast. And people will laugh, even though if I were watching my own set, I'd go, that's funny, but Jar Jar Binks is like 20 years ago and Dave Matthews is like 25 years ago. Are we really that fucking hyped up on nostalgia? Speaking of nostalgia, The Righteous Girlfriend added Wednesday to the Netflix list, or as I like to call it, since I'm old school, the Quayway, the Q. And I saw that Wednesday broke Stranger Things 4's record, Stranger Things season 4's record for like most hours consumed in a first week. So it's like technically it's had the most popular first week of any Netflix program ever. And I was just like, I'm reading my timeline and people are shitting on Tim Burton and blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, the Addams Family was okay. Like, it was okay. And I'm just like, but we are now, the key to entertainment at this point is, and I think South Park did this with like Memba Berries. Remember that? That's really where we are. They really nailed it with that, because I feel like it's like, remember Addams Family? Yeah, I'll watch it. Here's my thing. Yeah, I saw the Addams Family because I was like 12 and 14. And it was just, oh, those are big holiday movies. I'm like, hey, I'm going to go get some fucking gummy bears, some popcorn, and watch a fucking hour and 45 minute movie kind of geared towards me and like my age group. And then at the end of it, I was like, that was okay. And then I went and saw the sequel. And I was like, that was a little better. I actually liked the sequel better. They actually, it was, if I'm not mistaken, Addams Family Values was like the first and only movie to ever attempt to make Joan Cusack hot. I mean, no disrespect. John Cusack, her brother, is an ardent follower of mine on social media and has shared many of my things. But I remember just thinking Joan Cusack, she kind of has this like weird, annoying voice with a lisp. And she's like a good comedic actress. But then in that movie, she was like, oh, I have tits and legs. So they're going to get them in Addams Family Values. And obviously the greatest holy shit moment though in Hollywood history, the greatest, this is why Jamie Lee Curtis is a legend to me, because in True Lies, it's the greatest and arguably only Hollywood that dorky chick is actually a smoke show, because for whatever reason, Jamie Lee Curtis, the wardrobe was so great in True Lies that it was like, Arnold Schwarzenegger is married to her? Like, she's like nerdy and annoying and like not hot. And then when she has to like do that, she's like smoking hot later in that movie when she like is, and even, and it's a great kind of pivot because Arnold, it's, you, if you've seen True Lies, you know what I'm talking about, but that is the greatest, like, wait, I completely believe that Jamie Lee Curtis is unattractive in the beginning of this movie. And then I'm like, that's the hottest woman on earth in the same movie, and it's convincing. But yeah, True Lies. Whew. Great movie, True Lies. Great, one of Arnold's best, for sure. And Jamie Lee Curtis, that's, I know people might highlight Halloween or whatever else, but to me, when Jamie Lee Curtis passes, and hopefully it's not for a long time, I want like her in that dress with her slicked back hair in True Lies to be like the main photo that they post, because if you can't jerk off to an obituary, is it really honoring the person? I say no. Anywho, guys. Oh, yeah. And I also, did I tell you last week? I can't remember if I said, if this happened last week. Maybe I talked about it on a, I don't know when I talked about it, but I got a call from the Howard Stern show. They want me to submit some quick samples of impressions. So, hey, look at that, guys. Just when you thought I was out, they jerk me off and don't pull me back in. But we'll do that. We'll do Andrew Cuomo, Eric Adams, New York Mayor, Chris Wallace. I'm talking to Gloria Stefan tonight, and I'm going to ask her the tough questions. Is the rhythm going to get you, and is it going to get you tonight? You'll find out on Who's Talking to Chris Wallace.
Mitch McConnell said this might be a tough one to do over the radio, but you know what? That's what you get.
Don Jr., I feel like, is like less good. It's like okay on the vocals, but like Joe Biden, that's what we're doing, Hunter Biden. You know, so okay, so his dad loves him and he has a bigger dick than me, but like that's what we're gonna do. What about China, Hunter? And then I need to get into the.
So I won't say anything about the Jews because that's not okay. But I will destroy the trans community. That is an itself. My name is Dave Chappelle, and I'm, you know, so I'll do that.
And then Mike Lindell, maybe Kavanaugh, I think is good, and Cory Booker. So I got to submit a bunch. Oh,
Scott Pelley, this and more on 60 Minutes.
No, actually, there is no and more, Scott Pelley. It's always the three stories. Don't call that
the last minute because Andy Rooney died. We're doing the last minute. So when I say and more tonight on 60 Minutes, that's what I mean.
That's not really and more, Scott Pelley. That's like barely any more. It's really just the three stories. So you don't have to say,
just say this tonight on 60 Minutes.
And probably my favorite impression from 2020 that I did was the Scott Pelley interviewing Donald Trump, because I didn't even realize how much I had nailed the Scott Pelley until I took off the glasses. I said,
so you're saying you're not in cognitive decline?
And it was like him reading the paper. And then like even The Righteous Girlfriend laughed the next time Scott Pelley was on. He did the glasses exactly as I had done it, not even quite realizing I was nailing it to a T. But yeah, so we'll submit those to Howard Stern and we'll see if I get on for, you know, some more appearances. As my friend and comedian John Moses said, when he was talking to me about, he was congratulating me on my multiple appearances on Howard Stern, and he just laughed. He said, back in the day, you got on Howard Stern, you fucking sold out the next weekend, wherever you were performing. And he's like, you, nothing. And I was like, yeah, that's my magic touch. I need your magic touch. Aerosmith Magic Touch off of Permanent Vacation. My favorite deep cut that nobody ever references because it wasn't a single or anything. But that's one of my favorite Aerosmith songs, Magic Touch. I need your magic touch. Don't you know? I got a feeling and I won't let go. Feel the fire. Anyway, so promoted shows. I've talked about Patreon. I've bitched a lot about everything. I talked about Dave Matthews Band and Jar Jar Binks. Miss a play too much. too much. Traffic jam. And then it just merges. You can't tell if I'm doing Jar Jar Binks or Dave Matthews. Crash into me. Anyway, that's Dave Matthews and Jar Jar Binks, two malfunctioning robots. Oh no, is the Dave Matthews machine breaking? Uh-oh, you know what happens when you die? You shit, or if you're Dave Matthews, the trombone plays. So, let's talk about sex. Boom, boom. Was that Salt and Pepper? No, who is Let's Talk About Sex? That was Salt and Pepper, right? Anyway, I could pronounce the hard R in Pepper. Sorry. Is that racist? Salt and Pepper. Look at you, Pepper. Well, Pepper is like a black spice, so it really does sound like a surrogate for a proxy for a racist slur. Anyway, we'll throw that into the next special that nobody will buy. Anywho, guys, I got one review, and I got to recap my uncle adventures with my nephew. My nephew had a soccer tournament with his club team in California, because
soccer club teams not afraid of bankrupting families for the possibility of getting a college scholarship for their child.
And because nobody could chaperone him, he basically had to say no. So my nephew, ever the negotiator, basically was like, well, since I can't do this trip for many thousands of dollars, could you like hook me and my friends up with like we'll go to a football game. So we went to see on my brother's dime. I covered snacks because I'm a good uncle and the Lyft rides. But I took my nephew and three of his friends to the Giants game yesterday, which in classic JL Jinx fashion ended in a tie. So nobody won. We went to the game and no one won. I'll tell you who won: the concession stand guy, because I got to give MetLife Stadium its due. Simple concessions. You go to Yankee Stadium, it's a fucking farmer's market, it's a four-star Michelin restaurant. It's you're like, is there a hot dog anywhere in the stadium? Well, we have tofu sushi rolls. Hot dog? Oh yeah, there is like a there's a homeless man with a dirty water basket selling hot dogs on section 5,000,003. Oh, okay, I'll go there for my traditional baseball snack. Well, MetLife, it was just here's your Mrs. Fields cookie stand. Here's your food. One just sells pretzels, hot dogs, peanuts. The other sells hot dogs, hamburgers, pretzels, peanuts. There's one nacho stand, which even that I could get rid of. And, you know, your beer and sausage. And it was just like, boom, we've simplified. Now, I was in the cheap seats, which there really are no cheap seats, but it was a pretty good view. You can see I posted on Twitter and Facebook, I think, my shot of the field. But I just appreciated the simplicity of the snacks. The hot dogs were good. The pretzels were good. I had two cups of hot chocolate because I was cold and I'm a bitch, as well as a child. Ran into a former coworker from the Bronx DA's office there with his son. It was very, very nice to see him. And it was a fun day, and it ended in a tie because wherever I go, nobody wins. Like the last time I went to a baseball game for the first time in 3 years. This year, and the Yankees were no hit for the first time in 19 years. It's the only baseball game I've been to since like 2018. They got no hit. First time in 19 years. Pretty crazy. And then I go to my first football game since 2012. I went with an ex-girlfriend to Giants Steelers in 2012. I don't remember what happened, but they won. And that was a fun day and night. And then the game before that, my last game before that was the Tackle That N-Word game at Heinz Field, if you're familiar with my blog, in 2009. The last time I saw a Pittsburgh Steeler game in Pittsburgh, 2009. My brother and I had gone for like 3 years, 4 years in a row. Haven't been back since. For him, it has to do more with family. For me, it's because I don't like going to stadiums where people yell out racial slurs. So I was already souring a little bit on the football before Kaepernick, but once they blackballed Kaepernick, that was it. But obviously I'm allowed to chaperone my nephew. We're not going to deny the children for wokeness, okay? When I'm taking my nephew, wokeness dies. That's my spin on Ron DeSantis. But we sat there, and it was a tie, and then we got a Lyft back. We had to get the Lyft XL for all of us. And I got to say, being the cool uncle, you try to be the cool uncle, but this is why being a cool parent is a bunch of bullshit. If you're a cool parent, you're a bad parent. I said it. Because I kept having to tell these kids to take their feet off the seats in front of them. And I'm not one of those people. I'm like, I don't care if every fucking animal in here puts their dirty feet on the handrests and seats in front of them if they're empty. Those are somebody's seats that they paid like $100 or $200 for. So, like, no. So I had to scold them a couple times. And I was just like, come on, man. Not while I'm, like, just take. But eventually I gave up. And maybe it was because I didn't want to be like the nagging uncle. And that's like the pathway to trying to being a cool parent. But I was just like, no. Stop. And I gave up. I reprimanded them a couple times, like in a chill way. But I was just like, come on. And they're like, nobody's sitting here. I'm like, but if somebody comes to their seat, I wouldn't want to see somebody's dirty ass feet on my seat that I may have paid like a couple $100 for. But of course, the first few rows in front of us were completely empty. So whoever had those seats never showed up. But it's to me, it's the principle. And I'm not a big fan. I don't care how many people do it. I feel like putting your feet up on subway seats or train or bus seats or taking off your shoes at a fucking movie or putting it's all fucking disgusting. It's just like, you know, and that's what I always say when people go, oh, I'm not hurting anybody. I go, is that the standard now for proper social behavior? I'm not hurting anybody, so I can fucking, you know, hey, it doesn't hurt if I fucking wipe my ass on your seat. You can wipe it off. Okay, well, that's at some point, decorum matters whether or not you're causing bodily or emotional injury to somebody. That's the way I live my life, and that's the way I will die, doing things the right way and failing at life and comedy. Anywho, then we got a Lyft, and it was a complicated endeavor to get the Lyft, the pickup, because it's such a fucking shit show at MetLife Stadium. But driver, oh shit, I didn't tip him. Fuck, I got to tip him. He was a good driver. He said he didn't know there was a game, or else he would have turned his thing off, because it's the traffic just to get into the stadium was much more horrific than getting out of the stadium, oddly enough. And the man had breath that kills. I'm sorry, sir, but you're like, his car smelled well, and then when he started talking to me, I was overpowered with the disgusting smell of his breath. But he was a good driver, and I actually forgot to tip him, so I'm going to open up the Lyft app after this podcast and give him a nice tip for putting up with four rambunctious teenagers and a giant who kept turning away when he would talk because his breath was fucking disgusting. So that's that. And then review time. It's the review time. Bim, 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 bim. I'm hating it. That would be the theme song for my review show. But I want to talk about two shows, both on Paramount Plus. Get with it if you're not. Because Maverick, Top Gun Maverick, is going there exclusively at the end of the month, and I'm going to watch that shit because the GOAT deserves it. I finished up Evil from the creators of The Good Fight. Yeah, Michael C., my Australian fan. Evil's from those creators, and I stuck with it. It's like a good show, but it's not a great show, and I was kind of deceived by the critical praise because the first season, which was probably had the most reviews, was 92%. Then the second season was 95%, and the third season was 100% on Rotten Tomatoes. So that seems like improvement, but I feel like probably only positive critics return to like keep reviewing subsequent seasons. So I feel like when you see that trajectory, you should really only take the first season as gospel, because it's probably just fans of the show coming back and be like, when I heard that season three was back, I was very excited. It's like a good show, but I don't think it's a great show, and I may stick with it. It's got good performances, and like there's some episodes I really like and some episodes where I'm like, this isn't that frightening. It's more goofy sometimes. But I'd be lying if I said I wasn't a little disappointed. Like, I expected it to sort of improve, and it kind of stayed the same. It was like, this is a good show, but I kind of stuck with it because I thought it was going to improve. I was fooled by the increasingly high rating on Rotten Tomatoes. So, you know, that's that. But I guess I wouldn't recommend it because there's so much king out there that I don't want to just say, spend the next 24 hours of your viewing time watching the 36 episodes of Evil. But now that I'm done with it, obviously it wouldn't be as big a lift when it comes back next year, week by week, to just be like, yeah, I can watch a 45-minute episode of this to see what happens. But I wouldn't recommend, if you haven't watched it, I would say, like, it's not worth your time to just block out other shows and binge three seasons of Evil. So sorry, Evil. I'll continue watching, but you don't get the JL seal of go watch this. Sorry, not sorry. And then, here is a sorry. A mea culpa. A Covan mea culpa. Now, I tweeted and discussed The Offer on Paramount Plus, which is the 10-part series dramatization of the making of The Godfather. And I quit after about 3 minutes because one of the first lines in the show was a guy going, leave the cannoli. And I was like, nope, too much of a corny homage to The Godfather. How dare you? And I just quit. And then I looked at Rotten Tomatoes and I was like, oh, and this isn't even getting good reviews. It's like in the mid 50s. That's horrible for a show. And then I just said, I was feeling it. And last night I sat down with the righteous GF. We just finished dinner, and I said, I know we just started Andor. We're two episodes into Andor. But I said, I kind of want to try The Offer again. And we watched two episodes last night, and I'm all in. And I know there's some, and I even pointed out for my own integrity, I had to pause it and say, you see that line? That was a little hammy, a little fucking cheesy, and like they're trying to like really walk you through some stuff. But by the end of the second episode, I was like, I'm all in. I'm actually so blinded with my enjoyment that I probably won't even be as critical as I should, because I'm just like, oh my God, I love The Godfather and they're fucking making it and this is so good. So I'm now enjoying it. So now by next week, you'll probably have a review of Andor and or The Offer. How about that, bars? So that's it. So I'm enjoying The Offer two episodes in, and I feel like I'm giving it away that I'm probably too biased to ever just be like, this sucks. They did stupid. I'm just like, now I'm all in and I want to watch more. So Andor and or The Offer getting reviewed next week. That's it, guys. This has been a chock full episode of highs and lows, laughter and tears. anger and joy. So thank you for listening. If you haven't, give the show 5 stars on Apple Podcasts. I just need to reiterate, in 2018 and the first iteration of the Righteous Prick Podcast, I had 200 ratings. Now, 200,000 fans and followers later, the new iteration of the Righteous PK Podcast, 194 ratings. I don't know how that's possible, but it is. In God, all things are possible, and in JL, all comedy things are not possible. No things are possible. In God, all is possible, and in JL's comedy, nothing is possible. So it'd be nice to get over 200 ratings for that. Check out the Patreon if you're feeling the Christmas spirit, but more importantly than generosity is if you're feeling like you want to laugh and you're missing a lot of what I've produced, both podcastly and videoly, then go join it. But if not, so be it. It's another week, some more bullshit. Hope to see you at some of these shows. I hope you're preparing for the holiday season nicely. I hope your day is going well. I hope you're healthy. I hope you're happy. And I will see you next Tuesday.